Hello, everyone. This is Regina, and I am here for the Guiding Light. And, of course, this is the period of time where I am sharing from the Bible, most specifically from the book of John. And we've been looking at John chapter 3. Last week we did John chapter 3, verses 1 to 17. And so today we'll start with verse 18. Verse 18 will be the first thing that is new, but the truth is verse 18 is right in the middle of a paragraph. So we're going to go back and start with verse 16 again. I'm just going to read John chapter 3, verses 16 to 21, and then we'll start looking at it. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. Whoever believes in him is not condemned. But whoever does not believe stands condemned already, because he has not believed in the name of God's one and only Son. This is the verdict. Light has come into the world, but men loved darkness instead of light because their deeds were evil. Everyone who does evil hates the light and will not come into the light, for fear that his deeds will be exposed. But whoever lives by the truth comes into the light, so that it may be seen plainly that what he has been done through God. So those are the verses that we're going to look at today. Normally I start with a review, but I'm not feeling to start with a review this time. I'm feeling like the review will come naturally through the teaching since we're still in John chapter 3. But I still like to take that pause before I start teaching. So what I'm going to do is play a song. Hopefully we have some funny things going on around here. My speakers stopped working yesterday, right before the meditation, so we had this really awful sound during the meditation. It was kind of funny. I have ordered new speakers for my computer. They'll arrive Friday. Right now I'm using the Bluetooth speaker. That was Lynn's idea. I thought it was a great idea, but the truth is it won't pair with my computer, so it's not working. It does pair with my cell phone, so I'm going to play a song off of my cell phone through the Bose speaker. You'll be able to hear that. But it will also pair with Jasmine's phone, whichever one it grabs first when I turn it on. And Jasmine's currently taking a shower and playing music. So hopefully we'll get the song that I'm intending to play. But if we, you know, if it sounds very strange. Oh, let's see. Oh, well, I don't know what this is. I wasn't playing anything, but this sounds okay to me. This is Holy Spirit's song, I guess. Well, listen to this. I didn't even press play yet.
It's the hardest thing to give away, and the last thing on your mind today. It always goes to those who don't deserve. It's the opposite of how you feel, when the pain they cause is just too real. Everything you have to say the word forgiveness. It flies in the face of all your pride and moves away the mad inside. It's always anger's own worst enemy. Even when the jury and the judge say you got a right to hold a grudge, so whisper in your ear, say you set it free. Forgiveness.
darkness away, can even set a prisoner free. There is no end to what its power can do. So let it go and be amazed by what you see through eyes of grace. The prisoner that it really frees is you. Forgiveness.
Song. That isn't even the one I had queued up to play, so I'm not quite sure how that happened, and I hadn't pressed play yet. So there we go. That was our miracle song from the Holy Spirit, Forgiveness. So I'm going to start now sharing from John chapter 3, again, just starting with verse 16 and moving forward from there. So verse 16, "For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life." And the one and only Son, you all may remember, is life, awareness, intelligence. I call it the second principle of God. The first principle of God being unmanifest life, pure potentiality. The second principle of God being awareness. And this is really quite a symbolic sentence, because it says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son." It makes it sound like there is some kind of a decision-making beingness that is God, that could decide to give us life, intelligence, awareness, or not give us life, intelligence, awareness, and out of love has decided to give it to us. And that's not true. Everything that is occurring and everything that is what we call God is actually just a divine nature. It's a divine nature. You know, we have the first principle of God, which is pure potentiality, life, unmanifest life. And it's completely natural that awareness, I'll say, grows out of that foundation. Of course, these words are also symbolic. But it's completely natural that awareness would come from the life. And it's completely natural that consciousness and divine law would come from life awareness. And it's completely natural that manifestation would come from consciousness and divine law. You know, just like it's natural that a seed grow into a plant. And you know, if that seed happens to be watermelon seeds, and it grows into a watermelon, and then within the watermelon you find more watermelon seeds, right? That's all perfectly natural. It's not like some intelligence in nature decided to grow a watermelon from a watermelon seed and then decided to put more watermelon seeds inside of the watermelon. I mean, it's a natural process. There's not a decision maker there thinking, oh, well, you know, even though this is a watermelon seed, let's grow tomatoes, right? And that's the way this life awareness intelligence is given to us. Life awareness intelligence is similar to the watermelon seed. Life awareness intelligence is the seed that has grown into consciousness, divine law, and manifestation. Just like a seed, a watermelon seed, grows into a watermelon. But when you crack open that watermelon, there are more seeds inside of it. Well, if you crack open manifestation, learn to look at it differently, you find the original seed, life, awareness, intelligence, inside of it. It's still here. It's absolutely natural. So there isn't a decision-making, loving God that decided to give us life, intelligence, awareness so that we could become aware of it and awaken. The seed of awakening, which is the presence of life, awareness, intelligence, is naturally here. It is naturally here. So the seeds of our awakening are a natural part of manifestation. And that's really what this verse is talking about, although it's very symbolic. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life. So said another way, nature is so incredibly natural that the seed which sprouted into manifestation is also present in manifestation. So that no one has to believe that manifestation is truth. They can look beyond manifestation and see the seed and awaken to the realization of what is truth. Because it is also present here. That's another way of saying this verse. Darkness in John chapter 1. Darkness is seeing the manifestation and believing the manifestation is truth. But as John chapter 1 tells us, the light is within the manifestation. In fact, let me go back to John chapter 1. John chapter 1 verse 5. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not understood it. You see, the seed of awakening is present. It's always present. So the seed of awakening is here. And that's what John 3:16 is really referring to. So I'm going to read 3:16 again and then go on to 3:17. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, life, awareness, intelligence, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. That whoever looks beyond the manifestation and sees the life, awareness, intelligence, shall awaken to his own eternal nature, which is life, awareness, intelligence. Verse 17. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. So, it's interesting because for some reason, and there are metaphysical stories that give us the why, but they're all just stories. So the truth is we don't know why. But for some reason, as soon as the belief in manifestation occurred, the belief that manifestation was the truth. Once that occurred, somehow the idea of guilt was born. And we all know this from A Course in Miracles. It can be experienced as guilt. It can be experienced as unworthiness. It can be experienced as shame. Bentinho Massaro calls it lack. Lack in the way of I'm never good enough. Somehow when we believe that the manifestation is truth, especially when we believe that I am this person, this mind, this body, this I am bad belief is also believed. And when this I am bad belief is believed, what seems to come along with it is a fear of judgment. If we believe in a God, then we might fear that God is going to judge us. But if we don't believe in a God, we still fear judgment. We fear that our spouse will judge us, our parents will judge us, our boss will judge us. You know, one way that it's often experienced, you know, I used to be a director of a department and I had many employees underneath me, and I would often call employees into my office to talk to them about the projects they were working on, and often to tell them what a good job they were doing. I would call them in. I love telling people, hey, I love what you did. But what was amazing is every time I called somebody into my office, their immediate reaction was, oh no. Just because I was the authority figure. Oh no. And I always thought that was so funny because I almost never, never called people into my office in order to, I mean, I did fire one or two people, but that was extremely rare. Usually I was calling them in just to see what was going on or to praise them. That oh no feeling that we get when an authority figure wants to see us, that's just another symptom of this I am bad belief. You know, so we may not fear God's judgment. We might fear our boss's judgment or our spouse's judgment or our parents' judgment or our neighbor's judgment or, you know, whatever. But we fear judgment because we believe we're bad. So that's really what verse 17 is pointing to. It says, God did not send his son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. It's recognizing that we have this fear of judgment, and the fear of judgment causes us to fear the truth, fear the light, fear God, however you want to word it. And it's saying there's nothing to fear because the light does not condemn. The light awakens. That's what the light does. There is no reason to fear the light. The belief that the light is somehow fearful, that the light is going to judge you, that the light is going to reject you. These are all just false ideas in the ego thought system. There's no truth to them at all. So God did not send his son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world or awaken you. And then verse 18. Whoever believes in him is not condemned. But whoever does not believe stands condemned already because he has not believed in the name of God's one and only Son. So again, this isn't talking about the possibility of a decision-making being that can judge someone. This is just saying, if you believe that you are that person, mind, body, you are going to suffer. If you believe that temporary manifestation is reality, you are going to suffer. Because what's going to happen? First of all, we all have an eternal nature. All right? Our eternal nature naturally expects constancy. Because our eternal nature is constant. It doesn't change. So it's a natural expectation for constancy. And if we learn to look at that in us, which is light, awareness, intelligence, we know our constancy and we're at home there. But if we don't learn to look at life, awareness, intelligence. And instead, we're looking at manifestation, expecting or seeking constancy. We never, ever find it. You could say there's nothing you can count on in the world. You know, there are some people who are fortunate enough to have these wonderful, wonderful marriages. You know, they get married and they're always supportive of each other, and it's as good as a human relationship can get. But at some point, those relationships end in what we call death. And so if you thought, oh, I found it, I found the constancy in this wonderful romantic relationship, at some point, you die or your partner dies. You know, so even the best of what happens in the world, which actually, as you all know, is probably quite rare, this wonderful relationship that lasts a lifetime without conflict, the best the world has to offer cannot be eternally constant. And of course, you know, you may have children in this wonderful relationship, and you may have, you know, one child who worries you because of drug habits. You may have another child that worries you because of illnesses, or their partner has illnesses, or the grandchild has illnesses, or, you know, I mean, always the world is going to offer things that are not satisfying that natural expectation for constancy, secure constancy. And so if you don't know yourself as that secure constancy, that's what you are. If you don't know yourself as that secure constancy, and you are looking outward trying to find it in something else, you are going to suffer. Maybe not today. Maybe today is a good day. Maybe this year is a good year. Maybe this decade is a good decade. But at some point, you are going to suffer. So that's what this particular verse means when it says, if you do not believe in him, in other words, if you do not know yourself as life, awareness, intelligence, as secure constancy, then you already stand condemned, right? Because you are going to suffer. The answer, of course, is to learn to know yourself, to learn to look towards yourself as that which you seek. So whoever believes in him is not condemned. That's the answer. When you know yourself as life, awareness, intelligence, you know yourself as secure constancy, you are not condemned. No matter what happens in this world, you can be at peace. You can be happy because you know the world is temporary and you know that yourself is eternal, right? Whoever believes in him is not condemned, but whoever does not believe stands condemned already, because he has not believed in the name of God's one and only Son. All right, moving on to verse 19. This is the verdict. Light has come into the world, but men loved darkness instead of light because their deeds were evil. Now again, this is really referring back to the I am bad belief. You know, if we believe in the manifestation as truth, if I believe I am this person, this mind, this personality, then I have this belief that I am bad, that I am guilty, that I am unworthy. And as a result of that belief, I naturally fear the light. I fear judgment. So light has come into the world, but men loved darkness instead of light, because their deeds were evil. Everyone who does evil hates the light and will not come into the light for fear that his deeds will be exposed. One of the things that we all need to do at some point is what I call purification. And we've talked about that in this series, The Guiding Light. Purification is not actually that difficult. It seems like it when you first start, but as you go through it, you start to learn that actually purification is quite simple. Purification is the process of no longer believing false thoughts while allowing repressed energies to be present until they die a death of non-belief. And what that means is, well, I often teach it as rest, accept, and trust. But what that means is that there are things that are going to happen in your life that are going to trigger beliefs that you have, such as the belief that you are not safe, the belief that you are not worthy, that you are unlovable, all kinds of different beliefs. And if you believe the belief again, and you in some way try to make yourself feel better, you don't purify. You could say you naturally recreate the seed of that same belief. Just like the seed of light is naturally in manifestation, the seed of belief is naturally in belief. So if I believe that I'm unsafe and then circumstances happen in my life to start triggering that belief, you know, I lose my job or my partner loses his job, and I start getting all panicky and listening to everything my mind says. I go to my relatives and beg for money. I'm doing everything I can in my power to make myself feel safe again. In that believing is the seed of the same belief, the belief that I am not safe. And although I may be able to do something to make myself feel safer today, maybe my dad does give me $10,000 or something to make me feel safe for a while, at some point, in some way, that belief is going to be triggered again. So purification doesn't happen through believing. Purification happens when we get brave enough to not believe. Purification happens when something happens to trigger a belief. I'll use the not safe belief again. And we choose to be still, to be present, and to watch all of that fear energy move through us. We breathe, we rest, we accept how we feel. We trust this is healing. Most people are afraid of purification. They're afraid to trust that process. And so what happens whenever a false belief gets triggered, they revert back to their believing and their conditioning again. And that's what this sentence 20 is referring to. Everyone who does evil, now it doesn't really mean does evil, it just means you believe manifestation is the truth. Which means you also believe you are unsafe or you are unworthy. You believe everything that comes with it. So everyone who believes manifestation hates the light, or we could say is afraid to trust, is afraid to let go of control. Everyone who does evil hates the light and will not come into the light, will not allow this purification process, this for fear that his deeds will be exposed, or said another way, for fear of some type of disaster. You know, if you believe that you are unsafe, you know, your mind, I don't know about your mind, everybody's mind at one level is different. when I was going through letting go of the unsafe belief, my mind never had a specific story. You know, my mind did not sit there and tell stories that Jasmine and I were going to end up homeless. Or my mind did not show me pictures. Some people's minds think in pictures. My mind did not show me pictures of Jasmine and I homeless on the street begging for food. My mind was just more like this huge, oh no, fear. Like, oh no, disaster is at hand. You must do something. It never told me quite what the disaster was going to be. So in that way, our minds may all be different. But there was this strong, 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 strong feeling that if I did not retake control, oh no, right? Disaster is hand. You're going to suffer. And what was really interesting is I wasn't alone in this. You know, my entire awakening process has been public. I've been teaching from nearly the beginning. I started teaching 1 year after I started the spiritual path. And so when I got to this point, you know, again, the brief story, I think you all know it, but just the brief story is I was guided to leave my job, move to another town, and then guided to read the New Testament, let it be interpreted through me. So I'm sitting in North Carolina every day, reading the New Testament and writing the dictation that is coming for me to write, writing NTI. But there's no money coming in from anywhere. No money at all from anywhere at this point. And as my savings got lower and lower and lower, my mind began to really tell me, you know, my God, what have you done? I mean, you know, something bad is going to happen. Again, it wasn't specific, but oh no. And there was this one point, it seems to me like it was a January, you know, maybe January of 2006. I don't remember exactly, but it seems to me like it was a January. And the fear got huge. And so what I did at that time,
disconnected.
Whoops. At that time, we didn't have Facebook yet. We were all on Yahoo groups, and most of us were on the Peace of God. And so I was writing on the Peace of God every day and teaching here. You know, then it was ACM Gathered, but teaching here about what I was going through. And I was talking about this huge fear that was arising and how my mind was telling me, you know how to get a job. You're a professional woman. You don't need to let this happen. You can just go out there and get a job. And yet at the same time, intuitively, honestly, I felt intuitively to do nothing. And so I would talk to people about this fear and what I was experiencing and how I felt the guidance to just do nothing. And the people that were either listening here in this room or the people that were reading on Peace of God were sending me emails saying, oh my gosh, Regina, just go get a job. I mean, they were fearing for me. My spiritual friends were on the side of the ego. There was literally no one other than my intuition telling me to do nothing. This shows how afraid of the light people are. This shows how much we believe in the manifestation. It's kind of like, you know what, this spiritual stuff is fun and okay as long as it doesn't get dangerous. But when it gets dangerous, when we're at risk of running out of money or when we're at risk of something, that's when throw out the spiritual stuff, go back to what you know, go back to your conditioning, and, you know, take control and make yourself safe again. You know? That's very built into us. And that's what this line is talking about. Everyone who does evil, again, this means everyone who believes manifestation is the truth. And just because we're on the, whoops, all kinds of things happening around here. I won't go into that. I won't go into telling you the story of what's happening in my house now while my mechanical stuff is acting weird. That's not important. Even when we're on the spiritual path, just because we're on the spiritual path, just because we talk about the fact that the world is not real, that there's an eternal truth that's beyond the world and blah, 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 does not by any stretch of the imagination mean that we have accepted that as true. Most people on the spiritual path, by far, still believe the world is true. And that's what Jesus is saying here. And again, he's not saying we're guilty for it, or I am bad thought, likes to think that means I'm guilty. And that's not what's being said here. It's just pointing out that we believe the world is true. We believe I am this person. We believe I am unsafe. We believe I am bad. And when something really triggers it, we revert to our conditioning. We do not trust the light enough or love the light enough to let go of control and let it take over. And in fact, love the light and trust the light. I mean, you know, I did do nothing in spite of everyone, my mind and everyone else telling me to go get a job. I did not. And I did not because I knew that my intuition, it had nothing to do with me being lazy. In fact, anybody that knows me knows I'm not lazy. I'm very, very responsible, very capable of doing a lot of things. You know, there's nothing in me that avoids work, right? I know some people on the spiritual path are work avoiders, but I am not. It had nothing to do with not wanting to work for a living. It had everything to do with the fact that my intuition was saying, you know, without words, my intuition was saying, do nothing and you will heal. Just do nothing. Just hold your ground through this storm and you will heal. It was the promise of healing. And for my part, what gave me the strength to go through an honest purification process and not retake control was two things. One, I had the desire to heal, really had the desire to heal. I wanted to heal. I wanted to heal more than anything else, more than be safe, right? I was willing to risk not being safe in order to heal. And the other, which is maybe just the same thing said another way, but I wanted to find out for myself if the truth was true. I wanted the direct experience of truth. And I knew that if I caved into my fear, caved into my conditioning, that I would never know for myself. And to me, that was, you could say, a greater loss. So I loved the light. I wanted the truth. And because I loved the light, because I wanted the truth, I did nothing. I did not revert to my conditioning. I did not revert to my conditioning when I was told by the ego and by all of my spiritual friends that I was unsafe and that I should get a job. I did not revert to the ego and to my conditioning when different things were happening in my life that was triggering my unworthiness, my I am bad belief. I allowed all of those feelings to just come up. I didn't get in the way. I didn't try to repress them. I didn't try to make myself feel better. I went through the purification process because, this is what's important, because I wanted to know for myself that the truth was true. And I didn't want to turn back towards my conditioning. So if we look back at verse 20, and this time I'm going to include 21. Verse 20 says, Everyone who does evil hates the light and will not come into the light for fear that his deeds will be exposed. This again is really saying, everyone who believes in manifestation is going to cling to manifestation, going to cling to control, going to cling to their conditioning because they're too afraid not to. But then listen to the next sentence. But whoever lives by the truth comes into the light so that it may be seen plainly that what he has been done through God. This is saying that if you love the light, love truth, want truth more than you love manifestation or more than you believe in manifestation, then you will go through this purification process. You will be able to stand your ground. You will be able to not turn around and revert to your conditioning. And, you know, the Bible is not the only place that says this. I think some of you all are familiar with Michael Langford because I mention him a lot. Now Barb Dearwater also mentions him a lot in the sanctuary. Michael Langford, in his book, The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, teaches that the most important first step to awakening is increasing your intense desire for liberation. That's how he words it. Increasing your intense desire for liberation. The way Jesus would say it here is loving the light, living by the light, being committed to the light. If you love the light, live by the light, you're committed to the light, then you will find the strength to allow the purification process without returning to your conditioning. But if you believe the manifestation more, if you believe that you are this body and you must protect yourself, then when the rubber hits the road, as they say, the going gets tough, you will revert back to your conditioning. And that's what Jesus is saying here. So the gist of John chapter 3, verses 1 to 21 is, you can awaken. You can know God. You can know truth. You can know what you are. But in order to do this, two things are required. One, purification. And if you believe the world too much, you probably will not be successful at purification. You need to love the light. You need to trust the light. You need to want to know the light or know the truth more. You need to have this intense desire for liberation. And that's where the second thing you must do comes in. Again, in order to awaken, there are two things you must do. One is purification. The second thing is you must learn to find and trust your own inner wisdom. Jesus called it being born of water and the Spirit. Being born of water is the purification. Being born of the Spirit is finding and trusting your inner wisdom. When I did not return to my conditioning, when I did not go get a job, again, the reason I did not go get a job is because I could feel that genuinely my guidance was not to. I had found my intuition, and I trusted it. We can't make it through this process without finding our own inner spiritual intuition and trusting it. So not only do we have to purify, but we have to find that inner link. And I think that's really all there is to say about those particular verses. So it's a very, very strong teaching that that Jesus gave to Nicodemus, you know, by the firelight in the middle of the night. I'm going to move on. I'm going to move on to John chapter 3, verses 22. The next story is called John the Baptist's Testimony about Jesus, and it starts at verse 22 and goes all the way to verse 36. So first I'm just going to read the story as a whole. After this, so after his meeting with Nicodemus, Jesus and his disciples went out into the Judean countryside, where he spent some time with them and baptized. Now John, meaning John the Baptist, also was baptizing at, I don't know how to say these words, so, also was baptizing at Aenon near Salim, because there was plenty of water and people were constantly coming to be baptized. This was before John was put in prison. An argument developed between some of John's disciples and a certain Jew over the matter of ceremonial washing. They came to John and said to him, "Rabbi, that man who was with you on the other side of the Jordan, the one you testified about, well, he is baptizing, and everyone is going to him." To this, John replied, "A man can receive only what is given him from heaven. You yourselves can testify that I said, I am not the Christ, but am sent ahead of him. The bride belongs to the bridegroom. The friend who attends the bridegroom waits and listens for him and is full of joy when he hears the bridegroom's voice. That joy is mine, and it is now complete. He must become greater. I must become less. The one who comes from above is above all. The one who is from the earth belongs to the earth and speaks as one from the earth. The one who comes from heaven is above all. He testifies to what he has seen and heard, but no one accepts his testimony. The man who has accepted it has certified that God is truthful. For the one whom God has sent speaks the words of God for God, gives the Spirit without limit. The Father loves the Son and has placed everything in his hands. Whoever believes in the Son has eternal life, but whoever rejects the Son will not see life, for God's wrath remains on him." So there are two simultaneous interpretations that my mind received. One is, I'll call it the interpretation of humility. It's helpful if we can recognize those who are ahead of us on the spiritual path. It's helpful if we know when to quit talking and to listen. You could say that probably every one of us is ahead of somebody on this spiritual path and therefore can be helpful. And yet every one of us has somebody ahead of us that can be helpful to us. I can't remember if I've told you this story or not, but I'll tell it now in case I haven't. When I was new to the spiritual path, in probably the first 6 months or so of the spiritual path, I had this vision based on Plato's cave. And in that vision, we were all in this dark cave sitting. Not only were we sitting on the ground, but our heads were bent over and nearly touching the ground with our arms laying flat on the ground. And we were there because we believed we were chained to the ground. We believed that our wrists and our elbows had chains on them and were chained to the ground, and we could not lift up. And what was happening in this particular vision was that I was starting to notice that there were no chains. Just starting to notice. And I had... Sorry about this again. Let's see. I had just started looking around. According to Plato's cave, for thousands of years, my eyes had been, like an inch from the ground, staring at the ground. And I was just starting to lift my head and look around, realize that I could even lift my head. And when I looked around, what I saw was, everyone else nearly, not quite everyone else, but, the majority of the population sitting there thinking they were chained down when they weren't. But I could see a stairway. This cave was down, and so out of the cave was up. And I could see this stairway going up and out of the cave. It's funny how people call one phone, I don't answer, and they call the other. If I didn't answer, it means I'm not available. One second till the phone stops. Okay, so the stairway is going up, and I could see that there were people on each and every step of the stairway. I'll call them teachers. And there were also people in the bottom of the cave that were standing, that were helping people to the stairway. And so if I was to go ahead and start trying to rise up more, there would have been a teacher there to grab me and help me learn how to stand. And then that teacher, once I was standing, would have passed me to another teacher who would have helped me learn how to get my legs moving again and start walking towards the stairway. And then when I got to the bottom of the stairway, there would have been another teacher who would have taken me and helped me to the first step. And then another teacher who would have taken me at the first step and helped me to the second step. And then another teacher from the second step to the third step, etc., all the way to the top. Until that last person, that last teacher, reached the hand down and pulled me out of the cave. This is what I mean when I say every one of us is ahead of somebody and we can help them. And yet every one of us, unless we are completely, awakened, every one of us still has someone ahead of us that can help us. Humility is being able to know to whom you can be helpful and who is helpful to you. Humility is knowing when to reach, I'm going to call it down, and help someone else up to your level, and when to reach your hand up and let somebody help pull you up to the next step. This is humility. So we're all teachers, we're all students, both. And so what John is saying here is that he recognizes Jesus as the teacher that is above him. Right? He's practicing humility. So that's one interpretation that my mind gave. The other interpretation I will just introduce. There won't be time to talk about it today. We only have 4 minutes left, but I'll go into it next week. So I'll introduce it today. The other interpretation trying to find the right words. The other interpretation is that purification, John the Baptist represents the stage of purification. When you're in the stage of purification, it's like you're on a bridge. You are crossing over from belief in the world, complete belief in the world, complete belief that you are the person, to a space of having some recognition of truth and being ready now to walk with that recognition of truth and allow it to increase. So at some point, you could say, you have to know when it's time to step off of one stage, like the purification stage, and step into another stage, which I'll call the increasing of light stage. The purification stage is really focused on, and it's a very important stage, but it's really focused on finding false beliefs. This is when, for example, you might be doing lots of root cause inquiry, if you know root cause inquiry, lots of journaling, or you might be working with a mentor and getting lots of mentoring. But there comes a point when enough purification has happened that to stay there, constantly root cause inquiry and everything, right? Constantly relying on a mentor, constantly journaling, you're going to start to get stuck. You're not going to advance. So there comes a point when you could say you need to turn your attention away from finding the false beliefs. And that doesn't mean they're all gone. So it's very difficult to talk about this because there may still be some things that need to be healed. But you turn your attention away from looking for the false beliefs and towards focusing on the light. An example, a concrete example that we have here in Awakening Together, I've always considered NTI and A Course in Miracles to be the purification stage. Two different books that attract two different people, but the purification stage. The teaching of Inner Ramana is now turn your attention toward the light. Awareness watching awareness meditation is now turn your attention to the light. So it's like a primary shift of purpose. And so what John is saying here is it is time for me, the purification phase, to become less. And it is time for the focusing on awareness phase, In fact, self-inquiry phase is a part of this. The self-inquiry phase, it's time for that to become more. So next week I will read this again and we'll talk more about that shifting from the purification phase into the immersing in the light phase. What I'll do now is I will just pause for a moment and start some prayer circle music in the background, and we will move into prayer circle.